Radio EcoShock.
In about 50 years, oil and gas will run out. But our bubble of economic growth and increasing population will crash before that. It has to. That's according to our next guest, Dr. James H. Brown. He's a distinguished professor of biology at the University of New Mexico in Albuquerque. Dr. Brown, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
To grasp the big picture for humanity, let's start with just one of your intriguing concepts. What is the Earth Space Battery?
The Earth Space Battery is this idea. It's a way of thinking about the energetics of the Earth and the energy that's used by all life on Earth, including humans. And this battery has gradually accumulated over hundreds of millions of years as living organisms harvested energy from the sun in the form of photosynthesis and incorporated that energy into their bodies. And so one of the two components of the battery is living biomass, which is now mostly the living material that is tied up in the trees of forests worldwide. And then as those organisms died and became fossilized, they produced the second component of the battery, which is fossil fuels. That is the reserves of oil, gas, and coal that we've used to fuel the modern what we call the modern industrial, technological, and informational economy.
What are the signs that this giant planetary battery is running out?
There are two signs. One is that we have increasingly good data that the living biomass component of the battery has been running out since at least the birth of Christ, and more rapidly in the last century or two, as humans have had a bigger and bigger impact on ecosystems around the world, and that's through deforestation, overgrazing, paving, production of toxins. Humans have reduced the total quantity of living biomass on the Earth by about 50% of what was before modern agricultural humans appeared on the scene about 10,000 years ago. And that depletion has accelerated very rapidly in, as I said, the last 100 to 200 years. And then the other, in some ways more serious, potentially more serious depletion of the battery is the exhaustion of fossil fuels. Those reserves of oil, gas, and coal are finite. It took hundreds of millions of years to build them up. And in just a little over a century, we have used up on the order of about half of those reserves. And the rate at which we're burning through the rest is very rapid. So as you mentioned in the lead-in, British Petroleum recently has suggested that the economically exploitable reserves of both oil and natural gas will be exhausted in a bit over 50 years from now.
That's amazing. You know, I found that so hard to believe. I asked you for your sources, and here it is, British Petroleum and Oil Company. They're going to be out of business as far as profitable oil and gas in about 50 years. That's amazing.
It is. It sure is. And, you know, BP has had its problems with the oil spill in the Gulf and so forth. I think it's generally recognized in the industry that they have some of the best science and perhaps the most accurate estimates of reserves, rates of exploitation, and so on. So those are probably the best numbers that exist for us to get a handle on the depletion of this critical part of the battery.
Now, I have some trouble with your argument that economic growth has already stalled due to scarcity, whether it's energy or other resources like copper or iron. It seems to me we're swimming in excess oil right now with prices dropping and other commodity prices are also crashing, maybe partly because Chinese demand has fallen. Jim, how can you cite scarcity as a driver of a global recession during a period of apparent abundance?
Well, Let me first qualify this by saying that I'm not an economist. And the flip side of it is that hardly any economists are very schooled in environmental science and the biophysics that you need to understand the role of resources in the economy. But let me make a bit of an analogy and see if this helps. I don't think that anybody would doubt that energy, food energy, is required for a human being to live, right? We have to eat in order to live. And if we're going to grow, we have to eat more because we not only have to support the body that exists at the time, but we have to grow that body. And so we have to consume more energy in order to do that growth. And in a similar way, we would suggest that energy limits the economy and limits economic growth. But humans aren't always consuming more energy. If a human being gets sick and is less active and so forth, the rate of food consumption goes down. And it's much more complicated than that, but we're seeing something not terribly different from that right now in the global economy. The economy, since the crash of 2008, has been sick. And it may have recovered a little bit in the U.S., but globally, it has not recovered at all. So the economy is sick. It's consuming less resources. And there are a bunch of complicated things about the way that the oil-producing companies and nations had built their productive capacity to meet anticipated demand, which has been less because of the lack of growth in the global economy. But there's still no doubt but what we absolutely require, that energy from fossil fuels to support the present level of human population and the present level of economic development. And if we're going to have substantial additional economic development, there's going to have to be increased energy consumption. And one can see that, for example, in the case of China, which up until a couple years ago was averaging more than 10% per year growth in GDP, and it had about the highest rate of increase in use of energy, fossil fuel energy, and other resources which are also necessary for the modern economy, like metals, rare earths, and so on.
All right. Now, another contentious issue for some people anyway. About 5 years ago, there was a strong argument that peak oil would hit civilization faster and harder than the slow-moving climate change. And then we got fracking and deep water drilling, but climate impacts have been stronger and faster than anyone thought possible. Where do you see your work in this discussion?
Well, I don't want to minimize the seriousness of climate change. I think there's no doubt but what, you know, the science behind that is very solid. Climate change is ongoing, and if we don't slow or really turn it around, it's going to cause enormous problems for the Earth and for humans. But, you know, if you look at the kinds of projections that are made with respect to climate change, in part because it is so hard to slow down, a lot of the experts are talking about what the climate is going to be like in 2100, right? Which is, that's 85 years from now. And if British Petroleum is correct, we're going to run out of oil and gas well before that. And the seriousness of exhaustion of oil and gas, I think, cannot be overestimated. I think most people don't appreciate it, but it's incredibly important. I can go on if you like and provide just one example that I think people will fairly rapidly appreciate. We now have 7.3 roughly billion people on the Earth, and the human population is growing. The UN is making projections to the effect that they expect us at present rates to have 9 to 10 billion people by 2050 and maybe 11 billion by 2100. And where does the food come from that supports that population? And we've just recently dug into a number of online databases and other sources, And again, the best numbers that we can get suggest that about 15% of global energy use goes into the food supply system. This is not just agriculture in the narrow sense, but it includes transportation and preservation and marketing and all of those things. But to keep the current population of the Earth alive, we're devoting about 15% of total current energy use to this food supply system. Now, the bad news, the really bad news, is that somewhere on the order of 80% of that global energy use comes from fossil fuels. And much of the energy that is required by this food system effectively requires fossil fuels. You cannot easily substitute renewable energy from like wind or solar, which produces electricity, for the fossil fuels, because you need that diesel oil or gasoline to fuel machinery, to run the factories that produce the pesticides and fertilizers, to run the transport system that takes the stuff to market, etc. So if, as the BP data suggests, we're going to run out of fossil fuels, we're going to be unable to continue to supply the food needs of a large part of the Earth's population.
So in a presentation, and this is sort of part of what you were just talking about, in a presentation this summer to the Ecological Society of America, one of your slides says, quote, "A catastrophic crash appears inevitable." Do you think other scientists are also reaching that conclusion?
Well, I would say this. Let me put it in a little historical perspective. Some scientists have been saying this for a very long time. People like M. King Hibbard, who came up with the concept of peak oil, and Buckminster Fuller, people back in the 60s and 70s started talking about this energy depletion. Paul Ehrlich and Meadows et al. In the Club of Rome, in their work on limits to growth, warned us about this in the 1970s. So this problem and the fact that a number of really excellent scientists have recognized it and warned us about it has been there for a long time. I think it's true now that a small but growing minority of scientists, and I would call them environmental scientists, in sort of the very big picture, and this includes everything from physicists to climate scientists and ecologists, is a small but growing minority recognizes the seriousness of this problem. And then you get, you know, the situation that these things are all interlinked. So climate change, to the extent that humans are causing most of it, is caused by burning fossil fuels and emitting carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. As long as we continue to burn fossil fuels at a high rate, we'll be continuing to add to that and exacerbate the problem of climate change. But on the other hand, when we run out, the addition of CO2 to the atmosphere should be drastically reduced. And although it'll take a long time to get that CO2 out, the exhaustion of fossil fuels should put the Earth's climate on a trend back to some sort of a more normal historic trajectory.
Well, my understanding is that if we burn all the oil and gas, we will have started such a huge wave of climate change that it would take at least centuries and probably millennia before any natural process could bring that CO2 back down. So this is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith, talking with Professor Emeritus of Biology and Head of the Brown Lab at the University of New Mexico, Dr. James H. Brown. Is it possible for the most populous Asian countries to live as Western people do? And if they succeed, what does that mean for the trajectory towards a major systems crash that we've been talking about?
Okay, so this gets back to this issue that the economy is powered ultimately by energy, and it is the use of energy to do work and use that work to create the goods and services that economists talk about that lies at the heart of this. So one of the consequences of that, which we've shown in a couple of our papers and other people have similar data, is that there's a very nice statistical relationship between per capita GDP and per capita energy use. And from this relationship, you can actually estimate how much increase in energy use would be required by a country, let's say, to achieve a certain level of economic growth measured as increase in GDP. And we've made some of those calculations, and again, the numbers are very sobering. For example, for China to continue its economic growth and attain a standard of living for all of its people, an average standard of living equivalent to the U.S., we estimate that China still needs to increase its energy consumption about threefold. And China is now, I think it just passed the U.S. last year, as the country with the highest rate of energy use in the world. For the people in the poorest of developing countries, we're talking about on the order of tenfold increases in energy use to get them up to the standard of living that we enjoy here in the U.S. or Western Europe, Japan, or Australia. So then if we go back to the BP numbers on available energy, that's just going to be impossible. There's not enough fossil fuel out there to achieve these kinds of goals. And for that reason, we've argued that this widely bandied idea of sustainable development is an oxymoron. It is biophysically impossible.
Now, listeners, we're working around a new paper where James Brown is the lead author, and it's titled Human Domination of the Biosphere, Rapid Discharge of the Earth Space Battery Foretells the Future of Mankind. And it wasn't just published anywhere. It's in the prestigious journal, published August 4th, in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, or PNAS. And in that abstract for the paper, we find this scary little sentence. With the rapid depletion of this chemical energy, the Earth is shifting back towards the inhospitable equilibrium of outer space, with fundamental ramifications for the biosphere and humanity. Jim Brown, can we lose a habitable Earth, or are we just going to find this planet harder and more uncomfortable to live on?
Well, that requires the ability to foresee the future that I think really none of us have. You know, I mean, if you ask what's in store, here is my assessment that what we have created and what we're sitting on or in right now in 2015 is this, what do we call, a bubble of population and economy. We've grown the global world population and the global economy to a level that is completely unsustainable. And that bubble, or those two bubbles, are inevitably destined to deflate. Now, you know, there are a number of possibilities then. You know, the most optimistic scenario would be that that deflation can occur gradually and in a managed way that will result in a minimum of human suffering. The alternative, unfortunately, is that there's going to be some kind of catastrophic crash. And I would just add to that, and people portray me as a harbinger of doom and gloom, but I think this is reality. This is the world that we have created, that we're sitting on, and that we're leaving to our children and grandchildren. The reality is that some kind of catastrophic crash is very, very likely, and as I said before, we're by no means the only people who have looked carefully into this, the only scientists who look carefully into it and think so. And it's likely to come relatively soon. My own estimates are on the order of decades. Now, that said, the actual thing that sets this off may not be directly the depletion of energy and the depletion of the battery. It could be a global pandemic, or increasingly a spread of social unrest and war. It could even be a real crash in the global economy that then compromises the capacity to recover from that and to get back to exploiting the reserves of energy and metals and so forth that built the economy and are required to sustain it. Now, I don't see anything in these scenarios, however, that suggest that all life on Earth is going to go extinct or even that our own species will go extinct. I think this bubble of population and economy will crash, but I suspect that humans will survive at least some places. You know, they're in some ways insulated some of the biggest impacts of the global system. Humans will survive, and so will a substantial amount of biodiversity and ecosystems. And in fact, then presumably the Earth will likely start to recover from this insult that modern humans have inflicted on it. We've said, and I think this is true, it's almost necessarily true, that the only real steady state for humanity with respect to global energetics is for humans to be in a balance between net primary production, which is photosynthesis, and consumption. And the last time we had such a rough balance was perhaps 10,000 years ago or so, where we had humans living as hunters, gatherers, and some sort of low-level horticulturalists. But before the major rise of intensified agriculture and industry. So we're talking about reduction of the population, you know, who knows, maybe from, you know, the present 7.3 billion to what, maybe 73 million might be a reasonable guess. I don't think anybody really knows, and there are huge error bars around that. But that would be a hundredfold reduction in population.
Wow, it's pretty hard to hear this. Do you have any advice on how we can digest this awful news?
Well, I guess the one thing I can say is that the longer we wait, the greater the probability, I would say inevitability, that not only that the crash is going to occur, but that it'll be more devastating. So one of the things that distresses me being a grandparent is the seeming lack of awareness of the vast majority of my fellow humans, including many of my scientific colleagues, just this blithe unawareness of what a precarious situation the Earth and civilization is in at the moment.
We've been talking with the distinguished professor of biology, James H. Brown, from the University of New Mexico in Albuquerque. Brown is the lead author of the new paper titled Human Domination of the Biosphere, Rapid Discharge of the Earth's Space Battery Foretells the Future of Humankind. Find that in PNAS, the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. Jim Brown, thank you so much for talking with us.
You're very welcome.
I'm Alex Smith, reporting for Radio EcoShock. You can find more links for the work of James H. Brown in my Radio EcoShock blog, published every Wednesday at ecoshock.info.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.